From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The month of June saw the rotating presidency of the UN Security Council placed in the hands of the Russian Federation. This was Russia's permanent representative to the United Nations, Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia, speaking at the UN Security Council on Thursday as he recapped some of the highlights of the month, a month that leads up to a widely anticipated summit meeting between the presidents of Russia and the United States. Among the things accomplished during the month, progress in Syria, deep discussions about the use of chemical weapons, and this.
The presidential statement on the situation in Ukraine, adopted by consensus by the Security Council, holds special importance since that was the first statement of the Council on that crisis in 2 years, I think. Now allow me to briefly update you on the main events that occurred in the Council in the month of June. First, I would address the situation in the Middle East and Northern Africa, which was the signature event of our presidency, conducted this Monday. Russian Deputy Foreign Minister Sergei Vyershinin presided over the debate on the comprehensive review of the situation in the Middle East and Northern Africa. We had almost 40 speakers, not only Arab countries, but also neighbors and the countries of the region, including Pakistan, Iran, Israel, Italy, Cyprus, Vatican, and others. It was a frank and useful exchange of views on the root causes of the crisis and conflicts in the region, as well as possible ways out to overcome them. Member States positively assessed that event. I think the main message that went through is an idea on the need to establish the regional peace framework. Of course, it's not an issue of today or even tomorrow, but I think we should be striving for that eventually. Of course, the Council often addressed the situation in Yemen, given developments that you are all aware of, including the humanitarian situation in the country and events which take place around Hodeidah port, including as we speak. We discussed it two times out of it in extraordinary meetings of the Council in consultations. And of course, it's evident that it's obvious that the Council will continue to follow this, to monitor these events closely. With the Swedish presidency in July, which the Swedish presidency already confirmed. We have discussed the situation in Syria two times, the chemical dossier and the political process, together with the humanitarian situation yesterday. High Representative Izumin Ikemitsu, as well as Special Envoy Staffan de Mistura and OCHA Director John Ging, briefed the Council on the latest developments in the areas of responsibility. Besides our signature event, the Council also addressed the situation in the Middle East, including the Palestinian question, like we do on a monthly basis. You remember that our presidency started with two resolutions not adopted in the Security Council that later led to an adoption of a resolution in the General Assembly. Special Coordinator Nikolai Mladenov came to New York to brief us on the situation on the ground. We also discussed the work of Andov, whose mandate we are to review sooner rather than later, hopefully. The regime of maritime inspections at the Libyan coast was also extended for 1 year by consensus. And of course, Africa has been extensively discussed this month, including Darfur, Mali, Central Africa, South Sudan. Just this morning, we adopted the resolution renewing the mandate of MINUSMA, and the consultations on the work of UNMISS have just finished, as I saw people coming out of the consultations room. Two very important meetings that I should also mention. We had quarterly debate on the situation in Afghanistan with SRSG Tadamichi Yamamoto, USG Voronkov, and USG's Voronkov and Fedotov briefing us. For the UNOCT, by the way, it's the first appearance at the debate on Afghanistan. And in our view, that reflects the importance of addressing the issue of terrorism in the context of a comprehensive Afghan settlement. The other meeting that we had yesterday in the afternoon was focused on the implementation of the Security Council Resolution 2231 and the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. USGD Karla has presented the regular 6 months report of the Secretary General on that matter. And of course, in the light of the US withdrawal from the JCPOA, the discussion was very timely and important. There were some legal aspects of our work in June. The Council discussed the work and has adopted the resolution on international residual mechanism for criminal tribunals, appointing the prosecutor of the RMCT and confirming that the UN Security Council has completed the review of the mechanism. On June 20th, International Criminal Court prosecutor Fatou Bensouda briefed us on the ICC Sudan's dossier, and on 22nd of June, the Council has elected the judge of the International Court of Justice. Our work is not over yet. This afternoon, we will deliberate on the situation in Central Asia. The head of the UN Regional Center for Preventive Diplomacy in Central Asia, Ms. Natalia German, will brief the Council on the activities conducted by the center since our last meeting. And tomorrow we will have the informal interactive dialogue related to the activities of the Peace Building Commission, followed by the briefing on mine action. ASG Alexander Zui will present the report of the Secretary General. And finally, let me recall that on June 8th, the General Assembly has elected five new non-permanent members of the Council: Belgium, Dominican Republic, Germany, Indonesia, and South Africa. We warmly welcomed our new colleagues and looking forward to working with them. Now I'm ready for your questions.
Okay, so Uncle President has the first question. Richard Roth has the second.
My name is Sherman Bryce Pease, and on behalf of the UN Correspondents Association, thank you, Mr. President, for coming to speak to us. I'm with South African Broadcasting. A few things I want to say before my question. Congrats on making it through the month of June. Congrats on making it to the knockout stages of the World Cup. And as Nelson Mandela once said, it always seems impossible until it is done. There is a World Cup final on July 15th. There is another final of sorts on July 16th in Helsinki, Finland. I know it's not on your agenda, but what can you tell us about this summit, Mr. President? And what sort of outcomes is it that Russia is seeking from that meeting between President Trump and President Putin?
Indeed, on the July 15th, there will be a final of the World Cup in Moscow. May the best team win. But I hope that on July 16th, it won't be the final. It will be just the beginning. A long-awaited one. Indeed, the announcement on the meeting of the presidents of Russia and the United States has been published today. The meeting will take place in Helsinki. I'm not aware very, very well about the agenda of the meeting. I think it's still being worked out. But I think that primarily it will be devoted to the state of our bilateral relations, which is to be desired to be much better, if I put it very mildly. But of course, we will not be able to avoid issues on the international agenda, and the suspects are usual. These are Syria, situation in the Middle East in general, the JCPOA, Ukraine, and others. That's all I can say for the moment. I'm glad that the announcement was made, and the long-awaited summit, not only by U.S. and Russia, but I think by the whole world, will take place.
Richard?
Mr. President, thank you. Hi, Richard Roth, CNN. Two quickies. What is Russia's reaction formally to the decision regarding the OPCW and strengthening its mandate to assess who is responsible for chemical weapons attack? Second, still another big story, as Sherwin mentioned, what is your prediction for Sunday's meeting between your country and Spain? Because are you worried your country will lose power since you are no longer president with your football on the table of the council chamber? Thank you.
Thank you, Richard. On the first question, if I put it in a nutshell, the reaction is negative. We were opposing an idea from the very start. We think it's a very bad idea to to entrust the technical secretariat, technical in nature, of the OPCW with attributive functions. It is not fit for it. There are no provisions in the conventions for that. And what is much more important is that it deprives the only legitimate body that can establish an attributive mechanism, which is the Security Council. And this is, in that light, in a sense, as a precedent, that's a very bad development. Many of my colleagues, I may tell you, privately in the corridors, were saying and were telling me that they understand that this is a bad decision. But of course, even those who said it to me privately, they voted together with the initiators. It's a bad move. It will not bring us to consensus. It will definitely affect, as we were warning in advance, and it will have a mark on the political discussions on Syria, because both chemical thing and the humanitarian thing are just derivatives of the political settlement. They are not issues. Of course, they are important issues, and we, as you know, we condemn as others the use of such heinous weapons as chemicals anywhere by anybody. But the way our partners chose to go about it leads us in the wrong direction. On the Russia-Spain game, we already are happy that we are out of the group, which we never expected, in fact, before the tournament started. You remember that different options before the two groups ended, and when people were telling me that there were other teams that might have qualified, which would be better for us to play in the eighth of the final, I was saying that if we are worth anything, we should play anybody. So if they deserve it, they should beat Spain. If they don't deserve it, they should go and enjoy watching the World Cup on the TV.
Thank you. Thank you, Ambassador, for the press conference. Valeria Robeco from ANSA, Italian news agency. I have a follow-up on Trump-Putin meeting in Helsinki. If you're aware, what helped to break the impasse over the organization of the meeting, and if the visit of the Secretary General in Moscow played a role? Thank you.
I would like to answer yes to that question, because I was accompanying the Secretary General on his visit to Moscow, and I in that sense, I would be also instrumental in breaking the impasse. But I'm afraid I cannot go as far as that. I believe that the meeting that is, of course, long overdue, is finally in the process of the preparation and even announced, which means that it will happen, is in a way, on the one hand, the realization by the American administration that we indeed need to talk on many issues. And this is not just the wish of the two countries, but this is the wish of the world, as I said. It's not needed just for two of us, but for the rest of the world, because when we are in agreement on something, the rest of the world breathes better. Secondly, we know how difficult it is for President Trump himself was to go about that meeting, given the domestic developments in the country, which are not over yet, as we know. President Trump always spoke and continues to speak about his willingness to promote good relations with Russia, which is good for the United States, which is good for Russia, and which is good for the world. And I can only say that we welcome that he finally made that decision. It was preceded by a visit by the National Security Advisor to Moscow, who is one in the American administration that still remembers how to interact intergovernmentally. You know, John Bolton, he used to know Minister Lavrov even in the 90s, and they were meeting quite often at that time. He was here in the United Nations for us for some period of time. So we all We all have hopes on that summit that it will allow to move things not only bilaterally but internationally forward.
Matthew Lee.
Thanks a lot. Matthew Lee, InterCity Press, on behalf of the Free UN Coalition for Access, thanks for the month. At the beginning of the month, I asked you about Cyprus, and I wanted to know whether, since the Turkish elections have finished, you think that anything will be moving. And also, UNAMID was supposed to be voted on today. It was still on the schedule. The Sudanese ambassador told me he thinks it's going to be rolled over to mid-July. What's happening on the Darfur mission? Why wasn't it voted on today? And finally, if you're willing to say something about this counterterrorism high-level conference, it seems that Ambassador Haley, even in India, has said that their NGOs are excluded, that they're pulling back funding. Since it's viewed as part of this relationship you referred to, what's your response? Thanks.
On UNAMID, I was not briefed fully. I would, with your permission, keep it for the later. I can do it whenever next time we meet. On Cyprus, yes, of course, we were waiting for certain political events to happen, including the presidential elections in Turkey, which hopefully will give an impetus to the political process to move forward. A few things were delayed because of elections not yet being held. I will be contacting my Cypriot and Turkish friends soon. And let's see where we'll go from here. I mean, so far we don't have anything substantive that is different from what we discussed earlier. But now the environment is maybe different, and we hope that things will start moving. And on UNAMID, I'm advised we'll have the adoption tomorrow. Tomorrow, hopefully, on the last day of our presidency, we will adopt that document. On your last question on the counterterrorism conference and the statement that was made by the U.S. mission on it, I must tell you that we are not only disappointed, but in fact we are indignant and outraged by the statement. The decision, the historical decision by the Secretary General to gather at one table the heads of counterterrorism and law enforcement agencies and his appeal to establish new partnership to fight terrorist threat. I'm afraid it was from the very scratch taken in Washington as an encroachment on its alleged leadership in counterterrorism efforts. I would like to point out two false messages that the statement of the U.S. mission holds. The organizer of the event, which is the Office of Counterterrorism, allegedly took an unprecedented decision to deny the representatives of civil society to participate in the meeting. And secondly, as it is a habit, the U.S. mission found in all that the hand of Moscow, as it is a tradition. As if we were exerting pressure on the OCT to make that decision. Both statements are wrong. I'm not even referring to the unprecedented language that we find in the text and the fact that U.S. dared to deny Russia in its the achievements that it made in the fight against terrorists, not only to Russia but to Syria and Iran, who are at the forefront of that fight. Well, for us it is not surprising because United States often enjoys to claim others' victories, like it did in Syria. To answer this, I would like to tell you that the summit was being prepared long time in advance, and the fact that it will be structured as it is structured today, the decision was taken in May. So the statement by the U.S. mission is overdue at least a month. It was supposed that the representatives of the counterterrorism agencies, law enforcement agencies, and special services will gather in the UN at the UN headquarters for a professional dialogue on counterterrorism. Can you imagine civil society participating in the professional dialogue of the special services? I wonder whether CIA or FBI or the National Security Agency provides room for the civil society to participate in their work. You understand that many countries took it as very absurd. And the American delegation said that it will reduce the level of its participation at the conference. That's very regrettable. I think that they need to participate jointly in counterterrorism efforts no less than other countries do. We will make a press release on that. We will not let it pass unnoticed. We, of course, noticed that statement and read it very carefully, and we will reply.
Russia Today, please.
Yeah. Caleb Maupin with Russia Today, with RT. If you look over Nikki Haley's statement, she used the term abuse to describe the fact that civil society was excluded. And if you also look over the conference, one of the themes is countering foreign fighters. Now, we understand the USA has been supporting foreign fighters in countries like Syria. Do you think that this theme of the conference played a role in what appears to be hostility to this conference from the United States?
Who was supporting foreign fighters, you said?
The United States has supported foreign fighters in Syria and other countries. Do you think this plays a factor in what appears to be a hostility to this important anti-terrorism conference?
I will not go into analyzing the factors behind it, but I will simply say that there is a room for the civil society to engage in it, in the conference. The second day is devoted to their participation, and they are free to contribute to counterterrorism, because we recognize the role of civil society, but we also recognize that the main burden to fight terrorism is on the state, and especially on its special services fit to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Ambassador. I want to ask you about the situation in Syria. The Russian foreign minister, as well as the defense minister, announced that Russia is still committed to the de-escalation agreement with the U.S. and Jordan. But meanwhile, the military campaign is still escalating, as well as the numbers of the displaced people. What do you want to see on the ground? What are your requirements to freeze this military campaign, noting that this campaign is targeting the groups that participated in Astana conference previously?
In that zone that you mentioned, there are 15,000, according to our estimates, there are 50,000 Daesh and Nusra combatants. 15,000. In addition to the, for example, Free Syrian Army or the Southern Front, which are considered to be moderate opposition. Our military are trying to negotiate with the moderate opposition the same agreements that they managed to achieve in other areas of Syria. And you know that developments took place. Some of them said that they would fight on the side of the Syrian government. And we continue to honor the de-escalation zone in a sense that this does not on the condition that it does not concern the terrorists who are not exempt from being fought. We understand fully the concerns that the neighboring countries are having in that area, including Israel and Jordan, and we are consulting with them on that issue as well. Besides, the de-escalation zones that were established were not established there for good. They were established for a certain period of time to allow people living there to live in more or less acceptable conditions, without hostilities being which might have resulted in, you know, in civilian casualties, but perhaps it's the time when we finish with terrorism in Syria altogether, not only in general, like we managed to do on the territory of Syria, but in the pockets remaining. And this is one of the pockets which holds a lot of remaining Nusra and Daesh fighters. I can assure you that our military, who are often the mediators in these campaigns, are doing the utmost to ensure that the civilian population is protected and not harmed, and that they have, if they are displaced, because it's the hostilities, that they are provided with shelter, and that those combatants that are willing to find ways to agree on the conditions, they will be spared, of course. But the Syrian army is not going to stop fighting terrorists, and they have full legitimate right to do so.
Xinhua Shi.
Thank you, Ma Jianguo from Xinhua News Agency. Back to the World Cup, because on the opening day of the World Cup, and your colleague and me, we talk about you have a very great show at the Security Council, and we even talk about that you are making history at World Cup opening day for the Security Council, at least to bring the football into the Security Council. Well, the history continue, and I mean, what will you do with the football during all these presidents say you have the football on the table? What will you do with the table? As the Swedish ambassador is a good player, on the first day I saw it, and will the Swedish will continue to put the table on the ball on the table, or you will take it back to your mission?
We made it fair. We asked our Swedish colleagues whether they want to continue with the football on the president's table. If they would have said no, we would take the ball away. But they said they will uphold the tradition and hold it till the World Cup is over. So the football hopefully will be on the table. And that's why I mentioned the football handover ceremony that I will conduct today.
Great.
Tomorrow
Thank
in the
you.
Security Council.
James Bass.
Ambassador, I want to come back to Helsinki, but from your vantage point here at the UN, if you perhaps could take the temperature for us right now about relations in the Council and in the United Nations between Russia and the US and its allies, so the P3. Some say we're almost in a new Cold War. If you could tell us how you see things now, because you've used your veto this year, Ambassador Haley's used her veto, how you see things now and what the opportunities are of this summit in Helsinki?
I had a chance to say many times over that veto is not a curse. Veto is an instrument, and a very important one. If we didn't have a veto, we would have been living in a different world altogether. So don't make that accent on a veto. We understand that there are interests of a country, not only ours, that uses veto from time to time, because this is the last resort that they can come to. We may not share their position, but we understand at least. Now, what are we living through? Is it a new Cold War, or worse, or better? It's difficult to say, because we are living in a different world. The world of the Cold War was when we lived through the Cold War in the 60s or the 70s, we thought that we are going through difficult times. We didn't even know what awaits us ahead. The world of the Cold War was very predictable, a nice one. Everybody knew their limits. Everybody knew how to talk to a partner or to an enemy even. Now it's much more complicated because the world is becoming multipolar. At the same time, we are losing a lot of multilateralism in this world, despite the fact that it's going from bilateral, bipolar to unipolar, and now to multipolar. I wouldn't call it a Cold War, because it's a different kind of an adjective that we should use for what is happening now.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.